If you live in a state with a primary on Super Tuesday, you are up to your neck in campaign ads, and probably have been for quite some time. Those ads have something in common. They're trying to engage your emotions.
Imagine all the progress we can make in the next 4 years.
Mike Bloomberg started as a middle-class kid.
If you feel stuck in the middle of the extremes in our politics and you are tired of the noise and the nonsense,
real change never takes place from the top on down, but always from the bottom on up.
The schmaltzy music, the inspiring life stories, it's all about getting your attention. And in the attention-grabbing business, technology is constantly being upgraded. Sue Halperin covers tech and politics for The New Yorker, and she's been learning about a technique that tries to peer inside the minds of voters on a second-by-second basis. It's called neuromarketing. Here's Sue Halperin.
Hi. We're going up to Spark Neuro.
No, sickle drill.
A few weeks ago, I show up in the lobby of a nondescript building in Manhattan and take a rickety elevator to an old industrial space that had been converted into a kind of cool-looking startup.
Okay, Spark Neuro.
Hello.
Hi. It's great to meet you.
I'm there to meet someone named Spencer Jarrell and learn about his obsession with the brain.
You'll see here and in the lab a lot of brain art.
What is brain art?
This is a painting of a particular type of neuron. And so, you know, I'm obsessed with everything brain. And so even my art is brain.
In 2017, he founded a neuromarketing company called Spark Neuro, which does a lot of work for big movie studios and advertising companies. What's new about companies like Spark Neuro is that they can track subconscious reactions in people that people aren't even aware of. They hook people up to their equipment and study how their brains and bodies react as they watch movie trailers and advertisements.
Okay, so I have to do, you have,
yeah,
to,
let's
you have
do
to
you.
Do me.
I'm here tonight to see how this works, and Jarrell is allowing me to try out his methodology.
Already.
All right, first thing that's going to happen is we are going to put an EEG on your head. Yeah.
I'm in his lab, which kind of looks like a college library without the books. It's just a bunch of carols.
You have your glasses for now, and then we'll put them back on before.
And some people just sort of arrive behind me, and they start hooking me up to all these machines.
We're parting your hair so that we can get directly to your scalp. So it is important.
They put a cap on my head that has EEG sensors to measure my brain waves, clip a heart rate monitor to my earlobe, and they put sensors on my fingers to see how much my hands are sweating, kind of like a lie detector test.
All right, so now you're going to see two ads, a movie clip.
For the demo, I watch movie clips and some old Super Bowl ads. There's a Mr. Clean ad.
Amazon's Alexa lost her voice this morning.
And an ad for Amazon Echo.
We have the replacements ready, just say the word.
As I'm watching, the sensors are recording thousands of data points per second and putting the data through Spark Neuro's algorithm, which spits out a measurement of how strongly I'm reacting to what I'm seeing.
Like, how far is Mars?
How far is Mars? Well, how am I supposed to know? I've never been there.
So basically, the algorithm is about attention, but then you also said it's about emotion. So attention, I understand, but emotion is a pretty broad pool to be swimming in. So how do you figure that out?
Firstly, it's important to distinguish that our algorithm is not reading your mind, right? It's understanding, are you paying more attention or less attention? Are you having stronger emotions or weaker emotions? And to some degree, what is the nature of those emotions? Emotion is incredibly complex. And it's an important, actually, for us to express that, to not oversimplify the science. And so what we rely a lot on is a measure that we refer to as emotional intensity. And that is, how strong are the emotions you're feeling?
Jarrell pulls out his laptop and shows me what he calls my emotional intensity graph, which looks kind of like an EKG machine, but it's actually reading my brain waves. And it's used the algorithm to graph my reactions over time. Positive
or negative. One of the clips that I watch, which in fact is something that I think Jarrell uses a lot because it has a lot of emotional resonance, is a clip from a movie called Crash, which came out in 2004.
Let's play the video.
We see a man who's having an argument with a guy who's pulled up in a van.
Give me my money.
You know, you start to have a little bit bigger reaction when they're screaming at each other and he's swatting the money away.
The little girl's watching from inside.
You saw her standing by the door, emotion spiked. She ran out the door, emotion spiked again.
And she runs out to a man we assume is her father as the man from the van pulls out a gun and appears to shoot just as his daughter is jumping into his arms.
So as we keep the playing, bang, gun goes off, and...
Wait, gun goes off, and I'm like, whoa, no big deal.
No big deal.
But wait, but gun goes off, and the guy is, like, crying, and still not a whole bit, like...
So watch this. So now they zoom in on the father's face, and now you've just reached a whole new high.
Right.
So things you reacted to, the grieving parents... The girl may be running out the door. Things you did not react to, the gun going off or being fired, because that you saw coming.
Neuromarketing isn't new. Companies have been trying to measure subconscious reactions of people for decades. But in the last 10 years, it's really taken off. It's really important, though, not to oversell this technology. It's still very early days, and there is a lot of hype around it. But neuromarketers tell you that what this does is solve a classic research problem, which is that when you ask people to tell you what they're thinking, a lot of the time they don't actually tell the truth, or they might not even know what they think.
If you've ever been in part of a focus group, you know that there's going to be some amount of groupthink. One person leading the pack? Are you saying what you think might be popular to say? That we would classify as social desirability bias, especially problematic in politics.
So politics, that's what I'm really interested in here, how neuromarketing could be used in the political sphere. In fact, some of SparkNeuro's earliest successes with their algorithm involve politics. In 2016, before the company even launched, they got hired by a media group that wanted to learn what made political ads work or not work. Gerald told me that at the time there was a lot of interest in this question of what's your brain on Trump. And this group wanted SparkNeuro to test their algorithm on undecided voters in swing states.
We would watch their emotion and attention responses as interpreted by our algorithms as they were watching different kinds of media, radio ads, TV ads, debate clips. And then we would show them their graph right afterwards. And that opened up a conversation where we learned that among many of them, they weren't actually undecided.
What SparkNeuro found was that even though these voters said they were undecided, many of them were actually leaning towards Trump, whether or not they were aware of it. And some of them were leaning towards Trump, and they really didn't want to admit it. Looking back, Gerald feels the algorithm actually predicted the results of the election.
I was personally skeptical of our own data. My VP of neuroscience was not. He actually started placing bets that Trump was going to win the election, and he ended up winning a lot of money.
In addition to convincing Gerald that the SparkNeuro algorithm worked, this was an example of how neuromarketing could identify trends that other kinds of polling and focus groups might not uncover. You can imagine how a candidate might use this. They have a campaign ad that they want to test out, so they run it through a neuromarketing study, and then they can go in and change the ad based on what they find. Maybe they change how they're speaking to make it feel emotional, or maybe they use certain phrases they know will get people's attention or rile them up, all based on what they see in people's brains.
Hello.
I wanted to see this in action, so I've come to SparkNeuro on the night of a Democratic debate. Gerald has arranged for about a dozen people to show up and watch the debate as they're hooked up to SparkNeuro's technology. These are all likely Democratic voters that he found from his company's Facebook page. They all sit down, get hooked up in the lab, at the same time that we're in another room watching their responses on Gerald's computer in real time.
Okay. So we're looking at this participant. Now let's see how we respond to Bernie.
Whoa.
So right there, when he talked about working with Mike Lee on a bipartisan legislation, they really liked that. It just went way up.
They certainly had a strong emotional reaction.
Right, and
to
then
it
just dropped. What's important to know here is that a spike doesn't necessarily mean someone's reaction is positive. But people do tend to remember and connect with candidates who grab their attention and speak to them emotionally.
Every time they go to Trump, it spikes. It's interesting because a lot of times the Democrats are saying they don't want to focus on Trump. They want to focus on, you know, what they're going to do. But clearly, at least with this one guy, it must pique his interest. He likes Warren.
Yeah. Every little nuance
he's responding to.
You know, what's beautiful is we'll be able to then interview this person.
Right. This guy does not care about Tom Steyer.
We actually don't know who he is until he walks into the room afterward. His name is Michael Bradley Cohen. He's very clear that he wants us to put Bradley in there so we don't confuse him with the other Michael Cohen.
Because you don't want to be Michael Cohen who's in jail.
I don't want to be mistaken if you use me and then he calls you up. You
know? He's a white guy, 33 years old, an actor and a licensed New York City tour guide.
You were very responsive to Bernie in the beginning. Mm-hmm. You really liked it when Wolf Blitzer asked him a question and Bernie said, I'm not going to answer that question. I'm going to answer the other question.
Yeah, because it was classic Bernie. I think that Bernie has some of the best speaking voice and the best cadence on that debate stage.
Unbelievable. Tell.
You know, as we're watching your data, we commented that one of the reasons that you might have shown such strong emotional reactions to Bernie might be because you like him, or it might be just because of the way that he speaks.
Entirely.
The pauses that he takes.
There you go. If you go as slow as Bernie goes sometimes, you're never going to lose track of what you're trying to say. The sentence is shorter, but we all get the point. When Biden takes a deep breath, I almost go, oh.
And your brain agrees. So your brain tuned Biden out, really.
Yeah. Every single time.
I know for a fact that campaigns are already using neuromarketing. I talked to a company called Bellwether Citizen Response, who told me that they're doing neuromarketing work for candidates in this election cycle, but they wouldn't say who. And I understand that because this kind of creeps people out. In the last election,
we saw that Cambridge Analytica, a company that was working on behalf of Trump, had used psychological attributes of people, traits underlying fears to manipulate them towards a candidate or away from another candidate.
There was a feeling at the time that this was underhanded or a kind of mind control. Even though Spark Neuro hasn't worked with campaigns yet, Gerald says they might in the future. He hasn't ruled it out. So I wanted to talk to him about this ethical gray area that I was feeling.
When it comes to questions of ethics, at some point, I think this needs to be a very broad question that involves a lot of people from a lot of different areas, from academia to industry and so forth. In the meantime, each leader of any given company that's doing work like this needs to figure out where to draw the line for themselves. We've been approached on two occasions by two different large tobacco companies and absolutely didn't even entertain the conversation. Now, is that the right ethical decision or the wrong ethical decision? It was the right ethical decision for me. Any new technology has the potential for good or for bad. Depending on the day, how excited or how scared I am may vary. It for me is not a good enough reason to stop the advancement of the science. That work seems worth doing.
You could make an argument that what we're seeing with neuromarketing is just a more refined way of understanding what moves us politically, and it's a way for candidates to better understand the electorate. But If campaigns can tailor their messaging to make us care about things we might not otherwise care about, or pay more attention to policies we might otherwise ignore, are we really still making our own decisions? And if we're not, where does that leave our democracy?
Sue Halpern writes about technology and elections for The New Yorker. And she spoke with Spencer Jarrell, the founder and CEO of Spark Neuro. Sue is a scholar in residence at Middlebury College, and you can read her reporting at newyorker.com.